that's behind the scenes doing the work. So I don't forget those steps that it took for me to get here. So I make sure that I stay true to that verse. And the more that I do that, you know, things just keep coming. And I've gotten results from that my whole life. So it's, why would I become 30 and see the results that I got and go away from it, you know? So I've gotten stronger in those things. I've gotten more discipline. I work harder. I work smarter. You know, I love on my people harder. I do all those things at a higher level, and it just keeps improving everything else for me.
Here we go. Whew. It's warm in here. That's the problem, I tell you guys. First of all, welcome. This is the next episode in English. But at the moment, it's so warm in Germany, and you know, maybe most of you Americans don't know, but Germans mostly don't have an AC because it doesn't get that hot. And when it's getting hot, it's not for very long, so we don't really have an AC, so it's quite warm. But anyways, here we go. And what are we going to talk about today? I thought, because I just see, like, you know, people stepping in to follow my journey and ask, like, what is she actually doing and what is she about? And I realized through all the years now doing Instagram, writing and doing this podcast and all that, I consistently forget sometimes to tell the story why I'm doing this and who am I actually about and what is my life about and, you know, why am I doing this? Even though sometimes I don't really know, but you don't know. But I do believe, because I think my life is a little different in the journey that I took. And so I thought, like, I should tell a story how things came in my life to inspire and to motivate, because I didn't have the typical journey, and to see where I'm right now is actually quite cool though. You know, first of all, you need to know, as you maybe never really thought about it, I don't know if you're American watching, like, Germany is so small, you know, America is huge, you have all the different states, and you kind of can, if you don't feel home in the state where you live, even when it comes to politics and all that, you just can move to another state and your life can be so different because your country is so huge. And you still can do it because they're, you know, still the same country. Germany is so small, so if you don't really like the weather, it's not even there. Think of, you know, how different the weather can be when it comes to the states. But so Germany has a, like, a very much like a picture of how the perfect German should be, and if you don't really fit in into that system, it can become quite hard for you. And this is what happened kind of to me, because I never really fitted in into that system, which I also think that's the reason, yeah, why maybe not doing so much for the American market? I don't know, maybe, yeah. And why it kind of draws me to maybe leave one day Germany. I mean, at the end, this is one thing really, guys, what I can tell you. Even though I feel like now one day I will leave Germany, we never really know how life changes. Like, life can change so quickly. The next day, so even the next moment. So also one thing, guys, always be thankful for what you have. You never know when it's your last day. It's just a fact, you know. So yeah, me being 34 years, I'm the youngest from 5 more siblings, and many would say, oh yeah, you know, when you're the youngest, some things can get easier because maybe your parents are, like, not that strict anymore with some rules, which I don't even believe, which is good for a kid, because I think it's kind of helpful to have strict rules, which I would say, yes, maybe was a little easier. But I think what the biggest problem was with me, you know, when, because we were such a huge family, and, you know, your parents need to work a lot to make life living, you know, to pay for the bills, and you have already so many other siblings, so it was easy on just, okay, we can work full-time and Aurelia will be fine, you know, being raised with her siblings. And as a young kid, you don't really understand that, you know. It's just like, okay, why my parents don't really have time for me? And your parents think, like, oh, she will be fine because she's with her siblings. Which was one big thing in my life, but I kind of start more with the beginning, but just to say that here, because of, you know, when it comes to strict rules, and that everyone thinks like, oh, the youngest one have it so easy, which is not always like that, because I, as I just said, it can be very helpful as a kid, and my journey kind of went into the wrong direction with it. So, because, yeah, I really felt like I wasn't loved because my parents weren't there. Now, when I get older, of course, you understand it wasn't because your parents didn't love you. It was just they needed to work to make life living. And I was like, yeah, where are they? You know, if I'm not loved enough to spend time with me, you know. But yeah, so little Aurelia. It's weird when you speak of yourself in the third person, but yes, little me. I had it a little harder because, you know, when I started to go to school, think of I'm 34 years before social media and all that stuff, it just started because I'm dyslexia. And back then, it wasn't that the school was kind of helping parents or to think even, oh, this is something, you know, the kid isn't stupid. It's just something that can happen and we need to find a way to help the kid to kind of deal with that and to find ways, you know, to still be included and to still, you know, educate properly. But it was just that time where they accepted that this is something that it's not about that something is missing in your brain or you're a stupid kid. It's just some things are different and we need to find ways to deal with it. And then she will be fine. But back then, my teachers, which were like very old, thought like, oh, this is just an excuse for dumb and stupid kids who just, you know, that they need to accept that they're just not as smart. So there didn't want to deal with that and to give me like certain help to find ways, you know, to be included. And the way how they talked in front of my class to what it's about me, it was like, oh, she's the weird one, she's the stupid one. And then of course when you're always excluded and kind of, you know, the teachers make fun of you, then also your classmates are like, oh yeah, she's the weird one. Why should I hang out with her? So what happened back then when I, you know, came into school, I just didn't have friends at the very beginning, you know, because I was the weirdo and this dumb kid. And I also looked always like very different. Because I have very thick hair and my mom, she used to cut it because she couldn't deal, you know, with the knots and all that stuff. And I hated when she was brushing my hair, so she cut it. And I was like, hated dresses and pink, so I didn't wearing like typical girl stuff. So I looked mostly like a boy. And yeah, so this was like the first time when I came to school. So it was really tough for me because also what I just talked earlier about, that my parents were so busy and I was a very quiet kid, so I didn't even like tell them what was actually going on at school. So what happened was that I thought, oh, it's because of me, it's something wrong with me. So I took all this pain and like didn't talk about it and just was all by myself. Luckily, after a half year, we got this new girl into my class and she was also kind of the weird one. Because back then, no one in Germany was fat, you know, it was just different the way how we ate. We didn't have that much fast food, all that stuff. And she was a little bit more fat. So then it started like, oh, the dump and the fat kid. Like, so it was two of us who were just like, you know, not the cool kids. But luckily then I had her. But also when I reflect the time back then, of course, we were very close and I'm so thankful for her that I had her, but we also were like very different when I think about when it comes to interests. So this is also where I come later on to you, because when it comes to my sports journey, why I never even came into sports when I was a kid, because she was She had a horse and she was like, you know, doing all that horse stuff. And my parents couldn't afford that I could take lessons to, you know, to be included into that. So I didn't have a friend who was like getting me close to sports. And because my parents were just working all the time, it wasn't like, this is also, you know, the problem what can happen when you have a big family and, you know, you're the younger one. So because all your older ones, your parents kind of already expressed themselves, you know, to it's not education. It's more about to see, oh, what can we do to help our kid to find the interests? And so my parents weren't about like, oh, what is Aurelia maybe interested into it? And because I was so quiet and I felt like maybe I'm not loved, I never would have went to my parents and to tell them like, yay, please, can you bring me into any kind of sports? So it was just me always being with my siblings and just trying to figure out, why am I actually here when there's like, I didn't felt like there's a reason for it. So I felt like for very long, like I'm kind of a mistake. So me being very quiet, me trying to deal with school to kind of get through, because back then it was still a time in Germany, I don't know how that is in the States, that kids like who were like the different ones, they had like a separate kind of school to put all these kids there because they have special needs. And this was the kind where they kind of overthink if this is the right system, because you should also include kids with different needs, because when you always exclude them, they always will have it hard in life, you know, to be accepted. And so my teachers were still convinced that I should go on this kind of a school. So that's what they showed to me every day. And luckily, my parents were like, no, she will be fine. I mean, we can make that work. So the first 4 years were just like, I didn't get even like marks. So the reports, you know, you get hand over after the year when you graduate, like get into the next grade. It was just no marks. So, and I think it started then after I changed the school, you know, that's typical in Germany. You have the first 4 years and then you go to the next higher school, to a different school. And also when I changed the school, it was again the same. It's the teacher were just like, it's like a red line in my life that always, that's why school time was the worst for me. Because I don't know what that is. I mean, this is always the problem that we judge quickly wrong when we see people who are like very quiet, that we sometimes think, oh, she's arrogant. So what when it started like 5th, 6th, 7th grade, you know, that they consistently thought like she's arrogant, but I was just crazy quiet and not comfortable in who I was. And they were just annoyed by the fact that they needed to always try to find a way to get me through school, because I actually needed like special support, which I never really got. Because it was just, like I said at the beginning, to say like, okay, these are like dyslexia kids, how can we help them? And they still were figuring out the system, how to do that, and they still didn't really know. So when you were lucky to get into a school who was like more accepting that and to find teachers who can help them, you would have been maybe fine. But my schools were just like, I don't know, it was trash. I'm also coming from a small village. I don't know, like when you live in the bigger city, where more teachers, you know, involved, that you had maybe had a better chance back then. But also because I never complained, how should my parents kind of know how bad it actually was? But also because, you know, back then the problem was, you know, you don't understand, again, I think I just said that, how that it's not about that your parents don't love you, it's more about that they, you know, that they were just so working so hard. But as a kid you don't see it. And what happened then, I really started to hate my parents so much, and especially my mom. Because of course the bondage to your mom is always, you know, closer and more intense. And because I didn't felt like my mom was like caring about me, you know, you saw it in moments where, like, kids, you know, normally would get, like, shown by their parents how to ride a bike or how to swim. Like, no one ever showed me how to swim or to ride a bike. And it just, I just saw it then in that moment when you were in school and you had, you know, they gave you the lessons where you, you know, also need to get your marks to show you can swim, you can ride a bike. And it's like, oh, she's not able doing that. Okay, this is weird. And again, I was the weird one. Why does her parents don't show her how to swim? And yeah, and you know what was so funny when back then, when I think about, when I tell you all that, it was so much pain, because I always felt like, yes, you know, there's no one there who is like giving me attention or who's there for me. But now when I think about and tell you these stories, it just makes me so, I don't know, it's more like being thankful that I was allowed to go through all of that. Because when you go through a lot and you experience a lot of pain and you make it possible to live with that and to get out of that, it makes you just so much stronger. And now I'm just so thankful for it. Because of course, later on, I figured out, like, oh, my mom, she always loved me. So this is also a crazy story how that came, because of the situation, how it was at home, the hate that I had for my mom was also the reason that I left home, like, very early. I was, like, 3 months before I turned 16. And so, you know, school time was getting more terrible, and a lot of hard things I had to hear from my teachers, how the teachers actually were the one who were, like, bullying me. And then, of course, also the kids. And then also because my one best friend that I had from, you know, first grade, we split up then being together at school, because she was like very smart girl. She was going on the highest, you know, in Germany we have those three levels where you need to be qualify yourself where, you know, how to go on further on. And she was at the first level, I was at the second. So then we went to, I think, with grade six or seven, we then went to different schools. So it was just literally me in a class, you know, I went to till grade 10 and not having any friends also there. And the weird thing was, when at that moment when I realized the last time when I switched to school for, I think, grade, I mean, I don't want to lie, seven, it was 5, 6, 7, and yeah, then 8, 9, 10. So for grade 8, I changed to school again. And this was the turning point where I decided that, like, okay, I will let my hair grow. This is kind of like a new beginning. You don't want to be the weirdo boy. But what happened then, it was so weird, because I was still the weirdo and I was still the one, no one kind of, I didn't have the friends. But then what happened, from I was always very ugly, like people were like, had very early pimple, and then, you know, this weird look with the short hair. When I started to let my hair grow, and then you can start to wear makeup, you kind of can cover your pimples. And my sister, she was starting that time, you know, starting to work for a warehouse where she was like always buying me nice clothes. So I had cool clothes and all that, you know, which was important, of course, already back then. And it kind of shifted that people thought, like, oh, she's actually very pretty, because I didn't know about my past. And I was so confused, because what I experienced before was just like, oh, she's ugly, you know, we don't want to be around her. And then it started that I got a lot of attention from the boys, and I was so confused, because me being very always just by myself, not understanding what was happening, the shift of the attention, and not having a close relationship to my parents to kind of talk about what was actually all about these emotions. And I didn't even understood, I was very naive, what this mean, like sexual attention, like people, like boys liking you because maybe they're sexually attracted to you. I didn't know anything about that because, of course, I was never close to boys. Boys were never attracted to me or wanted to have me like as their girlfriend. So of course, I when I turned 15, I never even had like to have like a first kiss or something. When you think of how early that already starts these days. So when I was with the new school and this attention, and the problem was that the teacher again saw me in the wrong picture, and now they saw, oh, look at this girl, you know, she has all the attention from the boys. And again, this wrong picture, me being dyslexia, and just to say, oh yeah, she's just a stupid and lazy kid. And I even, they told me once, and I think this is also one of the problems, because I'm always single, and because this sentence, when you tell that a kid, this teacher said to me, she will never work hard, she will marry a rich man, and then she will won't do anything. And this hated me so bad. And back then I didn't even understood the deep part with that, what this message tells you. And I think this is also the reason why I never relied on a man, because I just wanted to prove I can do everything on my own and I work my ass off. And yeah, so many sentences said that just broke a lot in my heart, you know. Why am I always weird? Why am I always not smart enough? Why I can't be loved? Why am I now the arrogant one, even though I just was the most quiet person you could think of? And not doing anything. Like, I was the one, I was always going to school. I was never like thinking of friends of mine now, you know, when they tell me these stories, how many, you know, how do you say that word? I don't know. You know, when you go to school, you have like a German lesson, you know, how they have skipped on going there and skipped on going on whole days to school just because it was cool to hang out with friends and do other stuff, or like smoking weed or whatever, like trying little drugs or something. I was like, never smoke, never like missing on any school day. I was always doing my homework. I was this very trying to be the best version of me, but I was just never enough and was always taken into a wrong picture. And this is so funny because when I think about who I am right now, like, I'm a person like very easy to talk to. I would just come towards you when I think you are cool. I will tell you. I'm just, you know, a very open person, and it was just completely the opposite. And it's crazy how life, and this is actually, I think, why I am who I am right now, because this brought me like to the lowest level and where I felt like, okay, I lost everything. And at one point where I decided like, but I do believe in myself. I got the chance to, you know, build myself. And I think this is also why I feel never that I'm afraid. Because when you went through so much, I feel like, why or what should I be afraid of? Okay, so, but this is where I get to later on, but I have to tell some stuff before I get there. So what actually happened then, after I figured out, okay, school, this shit will never work for me, it doesn't matter what I do, I just do it wrong. And luckily I had the chance then to go to the States for the first time 3 months before I turned 16. And this was the best thing, my mom, because now I know my mom, she this is the cool thing, they sense, even though you don't tell them, they sense when things go wrong. And right after when I turned 15, this was like a big turning point in my life, because for me starting to look like better, be more attractive, so me, since, you know, first class, my friend that I still had, even though she was at the other school, she came into that class where there was this beautiful girl. Everyone wanted to be with her, and she was like, we should try to become friends with her, so maybe one day in our lives we start to become cool. And I was like, yes, let's try to do this. When I think about that, she knows that she's wonderful, she's such an amazing person, that she doesn't think of us like, oh, you didn't even want to be friends with me because of my character, just because I was, you know, cool. So she didn't took that in a wrong way, but when you actually think about it, it's actually quite sad. So my friend, she was trying to reach out to her, and somehow something clicked, and then we kind of became friends with one of the coolest, most beautiful girl. And she was like, okay, let's start, like, I will take you to a party. And I was like, oh, to a party? Like, you know, me just turned 15, and I was like, okay, let's go. And I remember the first time I was like wearing a jeans and a black t-shirt. It was something written on top of it in white. I borrowed it from her. And I was wearing like a black, like a thin, also like this a little bit, like a jacket on top of it. So it wasn't sexy at all. Like this t-shirt was like very like came to that part, like very high. There was no, you know, showing off boobs or something. And I went to that club, and I remember, because I didn't knew about, you know, sexual stuff and boys and being close. And I was so confused because I had so much attention from the boys when we went there. And I always loved to dance, so I wasn't thinking about how it could look like. I was just dancing to it, you know. And I remember, like, so many boys were coming over and wanted to dance with me. And what happened was, because since that day, I never felt like people like wanted to be close to me or like showing off that they like me. And because me not understanding what that actually meant, because no one explained it to me, it was like, oh wow, this is actually really nice, like these boys like me, you know, this is so cool. And I felt so drawn to going out partying because I felt the first time like I was seen. And so since that day, I started to go a lot of partying, and it became like we three became like very close. We were these three blondes, you know, going out for partying, and we were way too young. You know, in Germany it's a little easier, it's different than in the States, to go out partying. Of course, we also weren't allowed, because we're like, when you're 16, you're allowed, but I was just 15. So it starts with 16, you're allowed to go to midnight into a club, but with 18, it starts that you're allowed to do whatever, you know. But so I had like a fake, you know, papers and whatever. So it's a longer story how I made that happen. But so me with 15 years, almost once, at least once in a week, sometimes two times, we just start to party. And the problem was, like, I was, you know, way too young. I was getting drunk very quickly. And then it happened so often, you know, then we were starting to kiss a boy. And the problem, when the first time when I kissed a boy, so was this one problem that I felt ashamed, because I was a Christian. I believed in God. And I 100% believed, because I was raised as a Christian. And I believed 100%. I will marry, and I just will sleep with this one guy, and even just when we married and after, this is the way how I was raised. And so yeah, I was just this one man and no one else. And when I kissed the first time a boy, I was drunk, and the problem was that I enjoyed it because I felt like, wow, finally I get attention, finally I'm seen. And in the next moment, the next day, I just felt ashamed before my God, and I felt like I failed. And it brought me even more into that situation that I felt like, oh my God, you're just such a ugly, bad person, and you're trash now. It's not even from what people thought of you. And it was also before my God, you know, I messed it up. Because my mom, she was very strict on her faith. And because also we were never like close talking about stuff. And because we also never talked about what would happen when I sin. It was just like, this is the perfect way of a Christian, how you should be, and there's no other side way. And then when I realized, okay, I messed it up, then I thought like, okay, God will not accept you now anymore. And this shame then became so bad and heavy on me that I started to drink even more. So, oh my God, I was drinking a lot because I was just wanted to get rid of this hurt, this shame, this feeling not knowing who I was and what I'm actually doing here. And this was all when I was 15. So coming back to the point where I said, like 3 months before I turned 16, my mom was for a job in the States, and she was like, okay girl, she must have sensed it, and she was like, there's this one chance now, I will stay longer, like for 2 weeks now here in LA. Come fly over, we will try to find a family and you will stay then in the States. And what happened then short before that was like this year, me being 15, this partying, it became so bad. Many bad things happened to me, which I don't have a problem to talk about, but I think I'm not even, I don't know, you know, this podcast gets canceled then. So a lot of bad things happened to me. You know, these days where like it kind of started to give like KO drops, girls into their drinks. So it happened to me several times that I got these KO drops. And you know, this is like one of the biggest testimony in my life. How I stand there, I will come to that later also. How just God helped me out all of that to leave my past behind, and it is not a hurt on me from what I went through. And it's just for me a big testimony, which made me even stronger to be who I am. And but that these days, you know, being 15 and just feeling like this is bad, you know, this is bad. And now, and of course, again, you just, it's always when it comes to sexual abuse and all that shit that mostly these girls put that on themselves, like, oh yeah, it must be me. And because I felt like, again, you know, I messed it up already as a Christian, this is just, you know, of the outcome of it. And this is just, yes, because God doesn't want to deal with you anymore because you're just a sinner and you just messed it up. And when my mom was like, okay, you should come to LA, this is what's crazy back then. Now these days, it's not even possible to do that. I was with the one-way ticket, not being 16, flying on my own to LA, and I flew all the way to LA. This was fun. I had a kind of trouble even getting there. This is such a huge story. This podcast will be anyway already way too long. And one day I can tell you the story, how I even ended up. It took a while until because then I also didn't want to let me in because I was so young, traveling on my own. But somehow at the end, I was there. No working cell phone, no credit card, nothing. So I couldn't even like call my mom when I didn't get there with the direct flight, which I should have got there, to tell her why I'm late and not being able to buy you anything because I didn't have a credit card or nothing, you know. So this is so crazy to think about, you know, because it's before, yes, there were mobile phones, but to have a mobile phone which was working in the States when you had a German one, like, we weren't able to pay that. Like, back then this was like crazy expensive. So, you know, think of you go on a flight under 16 years on your own and you're not having a phone with you. These days no one could think of that, you know. You don't let your kid fly doing that stuff. Like, I think, you know, this is also when I sometimes tell that people, like, oh, how could your parents like let you do this? But this was also so different because when you already have five older siblings, of course it's different. You get raised so much quicker. The way how you grow up, you become so much quicker, like a grown up. And also because I think my parents were just working so much, it was also kind of the result that I was like so early on my own, that it was different than you never, when I see my nephews and nieces, thinking of let them like travel on their own to the States with being 15, they're so little kids, you know, they look like, I mean, there are little kids with 15 years, but I was already, you know, through all what I went through and with my journey, I was like already so grown up, and I was on a different stage than when you would look at the 15-year-old teenager these days. So it was crazy. So I flew there, and so we went to kind of different churches these 2 weeks and to figure out where I could stay. At the very last day, I already gave up. We found a family. I stayed with them. This was crazy. This was the turning point in my life because, oh, God always knew. He always prepared for real. Like, guys, through my whole life, you just see how God was always there, even though I felt like he let go of me. But so I came into a family where she was the owner of, was like a private primary school, so it was 1 to 4th grade. And she was like just, you know, handing out papers to me that I was allowed to work as a teacher assistant with 15 years in music and German. So I was teaching 3rd and 4th grade German and music. And like this report that I got at the end after it was 4 months actually. I mean, until that all happened, you know, I didn't went there and then just right away went to, you know, work there as a teacher assistant. So it took a while. So I was 3 months working there at the school. So this report that I got to, you know, this is like, it was the door opener to everything that I went to, whatever kind of job I wanted to have afterwards. Because I never really had the qualification because I didn't went on to, you know, to study or to qualify for a higher level to finish my school. So, but those companies always came like, we want to get to know this person, which is like written about me on this report, me teaching at a school with 15 years. So that was like the biggest blessing and the biggest moment where God just put me in by my mom knowing what was kind of going on, you know, taking me to LA, going to this church, asking this family, would you take my girl? And I'm being with this family. This was definitely a turning point. And it also took me out of what was happening in Germany, and which was very much needed because I come out of a very small village. And, you know, when so many people know you're in your village and you live the life I was living with all the drinking or what happened with the men back then, like my name was ruined, you know, and even though it was totally in the wrong picture, how people were talking about me was just not the truth. But you know how it is, like people make up their picture about you, what they want to think. It's not about what the truth is, it's just what they come up with, what they want to believe in. So this was important to get out of that. So yeah, and then I didn't have a visa, so I had to leave. And but also because in Germany you have to go to school somehow until you're 18, because I was too young taking out of school, I wasn't also allowed to stay in Germany, otherwise I had to go back to school. So what I had to do then was kind of traveling for the next 2 years until I was turning 18, because it was for sure that I couldn't go back into school because it was just not working for me. And what I was experienced being outside of Germany was so much more important for me to develop and to grow and to understand and to get out what was just happening. And so after that, because I have a sister, I have actually 2 adopted sisters from Africa. So one of them left Germany when she was like, I think 21. So she moved to Canada. So she was living then, she's still living there, but back then already in Canada. and she already had 4 kids, and she was like, I could, you know, need help. So I was going to stay with her and stayed there for a half year, and then I had to, it was crazy these days because I always had to go over the borders. This is also not allowed anymore, but back then it was. So when you went from the borders from US to Canada, I always got a new visa. So I was like consistently going over the borders from US to Canada. So I stayed there for half a year with the family, came back to Germany for Christmas, then went back for another 3 months to LA, and then again to Canada. So kind of, you know, was traveling for 2 years, which was wonderful because when I came to stay with my sister, she's also a believer in Christ, and I kind of told her just a little bit, you know, what was going on, and she also already sensed it, you know, what was happening during that time when I was 15. And she was like praying a lot for me and telling me, you know, God still loves you. It's not about that. He never like said like, oh, I'm ashamed of you. But actually the big turning point then was, it was 2007. I had like a short intermezzo from when I was like traveling these 2 years in between, you know, Canada and the States. I shortly went to Scotland because we started, my mom was like making friends there, and they had like a huge Christian festival in Scotland, and we were kind of volunteering there to help them. And I felt like, even though I always believed in God, it wasn't like that I believed in him, but I felt like, yes, he, you know, he gave up on me. I just did too much, too wrong. And I just went there because I felt like, yeah, I mean, why not helping someone who needs help? So when I got there, I was actually like, you know, helping to park the cars. You know, it's a huge event, and, you know, you had to order these cars in the field so everyone kind of finds a parking spot. And I was finished with my shift, and I was passing the last event that night, and they ended always with worship, you know, when they did music, like the Christian bands, and it was this last song, and I felt like, oh my God, I should go in. And it was just, you know, standing, this is also one tattoo of mine on my body. I'm sorry, so I always feel like I have to cry when I tell that story, because I have this psalm tattooed on my back, and it always remembers me. Because I was not even inside, I was just at the threshold, like at the edge, being almost into it. And this was the most precious moment in my life, because in that moment I felt like Jesus kind of was standing in front of me, but like covered from an angel, because I could, of course, I don't believe that we could stand even to watch in Jesus' eyes by dying, because you can hold his presence. And while, you know, the worship was going on, I just felt like he was kind of in front of me. And it was the first time in my life that I felt like I'm actually loved. This was crazy. You know, when you struggle always in your life, that you feel like you're not loved. And when I understood then also, you know, when first when I went partying, that I thought, oh, this is love, these boys, did the boy, actually in that moment was just one boy, you know, he loves me. And then you figure out, oh no, he actually doesn't love you, he's just using you. And to understand, it was a process to understand, because first I felt like, okay, when someone wants to be with me, this should be love, you know. And then you figure out, okay, that's again not love, because when someone loves you, he wants to be with you. But anyway, so in this moment, it was actually really the first time I felt love, and I felt like, you know, this is, this was crazy. So in that moment, I felt like God said to me, like, I never was ashamed of you. I never let go of you. And, you know, was the devil trying to tell me that, and to let me believe in that. And this was the moment where this was so important, because this was the moment where I felt everything I went through, he can heal it and he will take it away. And in that very moment, oh my God, my mom was there now. And it was still that time where I was like not having any relationship with my mom. And I said, like, I felt so ashamed. I didn't want to go to her, because she was always, since the years, running after me and telling me, oh, you need to get baptized. But I never wanted to get baptized, just because my mom wanted it. And I, like, mostly wanted to do the opposite, right? And I was like, oh, shit, I need to get baptized. And God, you need to tell her that I want to get baptized, because I can't tell her that. It felt like we're just then, like, to tell her, now I'm doing what you want me to do. I don't know, it was weird, but so my mom was somehow, she was actually in that moment when I went out of this event, the worship was over, and I was just crying like a baby, because I was like, oh my God, God still loves me, and he is not ashamed of me, and I now want to get baptized. I want to put the seal on my forehead, like I'm saved, and I want to begin a new life. And my mom was somehow, you know, passing this event, and she was crying. I was crying, and then I was like saying, no, I didn't say anything. She said, God told me, and I was like, oh my God, I was crying, and because it was in the midst, you know, early night, and I wanted to get baptized like right away. And it was close to the ocean where this event was happening. So we were like, doesn't matter, we will drive to the ocean in the midst of the night. And actually my brother-in-law, is it? Yeah, my sister's husband. I asked him, he went with me into the ocean and he baptized me in the midst of the night. And it was crazy dark and crazy cold. And I literally felt like I was dying, and it was the best moment in my life, because this was the turning point where I could leave everything behind. And this is, since that day, I'm easy on talking about my past, because I think it's the biggest testimony. And every pain I went through, I feel like it's a gift, because there's so much more kids who go through so much more worse and so much more ugly stuff. And it's just that you can have like a taste of how this can be. And it feels like I have so much love for these kids who are not living in a situation that they even have a chance to make their life better or to get out of it. And this was the moment where I felt like I want to live a life to help other kids, to inspire other kids, to show them that there's a chance to leave things behind. And this is why I'm living a life, I would say, these days, because I would think like there are many who don't understand who I am or why I'm living the life how I live it, because it's kind of crazy. But I feel like I don't want to live just a life by making my life pretty for me. I think there's so much need in this world, and so many who are hurt, and so many who don't know how to get out of this. And I feel like I want to help people. I want to change something. I want to tell stories. And this is also, you know, oh my God, this is so much more. I didn't even want to tell you all that stuff. And I'm so far away to even be close to, you know, to finish the story. And I don't know how to finish, but I think this is, you know, just to understand the base, who I am and why I feel like with what I do now, you know, maybe I need to put this in two episodes. I don't know how I ended up, you know, doing what I do with also the sports journalism. I want to tell the stories behind the athletes, how they got there, because one thing that I learned by everything that I do, there's always a story behind who we and how we became who we are. And I want to tell the stories. I want to I want to inspire, I want to help girls to be more than just, you know, I don't want to, don't get this wrong, just, you know, when I say, like, you know, you marry and then you build up a family, which is beautiful as well, but there's so many who, you know, maybe don't want to get kids and maybe be just a pro athlete or to be whatever, but as for us women, it's still so hard to be in a position that it's enough and we get enough money, that we get enough respect to be more than just a mom. It's just a mom and her, don't get me wrong, which is beautiful. 100% believe this is the most hardest job you can have. I have the biggest respect to every mom out of there, but it's also not for every woman. But in the past, it was just like this one goal, and that we also should be accepted and respected if you want to take another journey. And luckily we are in days now that we are able, but it's still so hard and it's still, you know, not easy to get in certain jobs as a woman. And but this is also a topic for itself. But yeah, so this happened, and since that day, you know, since I was like 17, 18, I totally changed my life. So where teenagers mostly would start to maybe party and drinking, this is where everything already ended. And I decided I want to live a life for God, and I don't want to focus on men, and I want to focus on what God has for me in my life. And then I always knew by, you know, all the traveling that I did, that I want to travel, I want to see the world. It wasn't about because of the traveling itself, it was about to understand what is going out there in the world, you know. So then I thought, like, oh, maybe you should become a flight attendant, and, you know, then you're able to travel through work. And because of my school situation, there wasn't much more that I could do, because the German school system, you know, and then what comes afterwards to apply for a job doesn't really give you room to do something else when you don't bring the proper education. And I was like, yeah, maybe I have a chance to become a flight attendant, which was also a miracle how I get in there, because back then I also didn't have like the qualifications when it came to school. But because of this report I got, you know, when I was working in LA, they said, like, yeah, we give you a chance, we invite you. And so they invited me and I got my job. I became a flight attendant. Was crazy for me back then, because it was the first time that I felt like I accomplished something. And I limited myself for many years back then because still of how I was, you know, the journey that I had as a kid, always thinking I never can be something, because that's what the teachers always told me. It's so hard to believe in yourself when everyone around you is always telling you you are not able. And so this was the hardest part. And this is actually, think of, guys, I'm 34 years now, which just started to happen like 3 years ago. So when I turned 30, this was a big turning point to, and this actually happened through Corona. This would be a big topic by itself. Because Corona totally was actually kind of the best thing that happened to me. So to understand that I always was limiting myself because I didn't believe that I was actually allowed to do something more or bigger, because still believing what the teachers taught me about me as a kid. So because then back then I was just thankful. Yes, I can be a flight attendant. This is so great. I'm just thankful for that. And so I was, think of that, think of when you know me longer, my whole sports journey, everything that I accomplished in sports, what I do now as a journalist, this was till that moment never a deal in my life. Like, because again, I told you, like, being the youngest, not being introduced through my parents to this is a thing that you could do to become an athlete in something. Or do you want to do any sports? Because this was never like given to me, or that I was asked. I never even had the thought. I never had friends, you know, basketball is not a thing in Germany. So I never had like people around me playing basketball, so why should I play basketball? Luckily, I was introduced to basketball very early, that I knew about it, what was going on, because my brother was a huge fan from Michael Jordan. And this was, you know, I'm 90s born, and when I was six, it was the time, you know, he was starting to get into his like three-peat. My brother was a big fan, and because of him, he was watching Michael Jordan. So he was always telling me about Michael Jordan. And I was like, oh my God, I want to know who is this guy. And because of my family in Canada, when I was 9 years, we traveled to Canada, and we made a little stop earlier in the States and traveled a little around there. And my mom had the idea like, oh, let's go to an NBA game. So it was 9 years when I saw my first NBA game. And this was when I fell in love with this whole thing, like, and knowing what my brother always told me about Michael Jordan. And then I felt like, oh wow, this is amazing, like the NBA, this is so cool. And also I thought this is like just a man's sport, because I never had in Germany, no women, think of back then, like there was no basketball for women. And not having friends who had any sports, not having a family who introduced me like into sports, I didn't thought about playing basketball. So it was just these men in America playing basketball. And so, yeah, but this was, I was impressed by it. And this is how I started, you know, getting into the NBA. And so just a little to get this connection. So I was working as a flight attendant, and then I was getting into it with 19 years. And this was the time I didn't know, so oh my God, guys, there's so much more to tell. When I was 14 years, the doctors told me this could be also a point why I maybe didn't get into sports. I don't really know, because, again, no one got me into it. With 14 years, the doctors told me that I have a hole in my heart and that I should maybe better not do sports. But I didn't even, you know, because I didn't have like someone teaching me he should do sports, and I was like, okay, fine, when doctors tell me no sports, okay, then I won't do sports. And this was like a big thing in my life, because I mean, this just turned out when I understood, of course, what an impact that has when you actually start to do sports. Because when I was 19, I started to become so unhealthy. What also because happened then is that my thyroid also didn't work anymore. So I didn't produce those hormones that you need. So it's like you don't have any energy, and you start to gain, and you become so so unhealthy with everything you do, because it's like a hormone that you need for living. So I went to the doctors, they figured it out, they gave me pills for it, but then I also said like, I have to change something in my life. And I think of, I was 19 years when I first in my life thought like, you should do some sports. Guys, 19 years, and think of where my sports journey now everywhere took me. And this is also why almost everything is possible when you really want it. And I remember I didn't know, like I wasn't educated about sports, and I was like, okay, maybe you could go for a run. And then I had like everyone has sneakers at home. I was like, okay, just go for around the lake, go for a little run. And I was literally like, I was trying to run like 100 meters, and I was like, I really felt like I'm dying, like my heart was bursting. And this was the first time where I realized how bad it was because of the hole in my heart. And then it was so funny, because the first time when I went for the run, I fell in love like right away. And I had always this voice inside of me who told me like, keep on going, even though I was trash, you know, I wasn't even able to run like a half of a kilometer by feeling like I'm going to die. And this day, actually, since I'm now 34, I never stopped doing any day sports, just when, you know, the day is like full of work with a flight, or I'm very sick, Otherwise, I always go for my training because sports changed my life. Sports, and this is why I give my all into sports, because sports just gave me actually my life. After Jesus giving it to me by knowing I don't need to feel ashamed, but then the sport gave it like a, first of all, to the health that I lost, like starting to become healthy, and to actually the first time having the feeling of I'm getting good in something, I'm learning something. You know, I just was just me being a flight attendant, me always being the one who's not able to finish something, to accomplish something. And through sports, I learned, like, by getting better and better and getting more into it. And then I started to become a runner first. It's so funny when you look at me now, like, I was the half size of me now. And this is crazy. Like, I know that now, but I didn't know back then. Actually, because I have too much testosterone, and I'm very easy on building up muscles, and I'm actually like very naturally athletic, which I also didn't know. So how I like was picking up on sports, it was so easy for me. I was getting so quickly better and better, even though I always had the struggle, always have that, you know, in my mind with my heart. But somehow I always found a way how to work with that. I understood my body with every training, you know, better and better. And this was also beautiful, because when you believe in God, I felt like when he said he made us after his look, by understanding that, and to understand your body better, I felt like I understand my God more and more, because he made me after his look. So this was beautiful. So every training, every day, for years I trained 2 times at the day, because I just didn't want to stop. And it was amazing how quickly I was picking up on skills, you know. And I was like running, I think for 3 years, and then I felt like, okay, I don't get faster anymore. I want to build up now muscles to become faster. I actually started first just with weights, just because I wanted to get faster in running. You know, I was starting to do this half marathons and just wanted to increase my pace. And then I started first because I didn't knew anything else. I said, okay, let's just do bodybuilding. And when I started to do bodybuilding, and I started like to see how my muscles were building up, and I loved this kind of a look, like having muscles. And I was like, okay, this is kind of too boring. Now I want to add something towards it. Like, and then I was like doing functional training. And back then in Germany, we were very much behind to all these, you know. Germany's not good in sports, you know, it's completely different to the States, you know. I mean, just you saw the Olympics just going on, how you guys just get all these medals, and it's so crazy how you just so crazy good in sports. Because it's also a big thing, you know, when it comes to education, you have it already in your school system, we don't have that, so which is a big problem. So yeah, and I was from functional training, then this CrossFit thing was starting. And this, because of me traveling a lot to the States, because through my job, you know, being a flight attendant, I kind of heard about that, and I thought like, this is so cool. I kind of add my running and being like, you know, athletic fast, and then also kind of including the bodybuilding elements, and then, you know, these clean and jerks, and thinking of, I never like did gymnastics, I never did lifting, to see people think now I'm a gymnast, you know. It's so funny how late doing my first handstand, you know, training, working out at the rings and all that, just because I started to do CrossFit when I was like, I don't know, 25. I was so old. And but I had this will and this big dream of mine, which are starting to develop in these days, to feel like I thought this is actually now my purpose in life, like trying to become a pro athlete, even though I'm way too old. And I was more about trying to see what is actually possible in that age, Is it possible to become a pro even though you're way too old? And I was giving it all into it. Oh my God, I became crazy about nutrition. I did all these extra, you know, I became a personal trainer. I did all this extra license to understand the body better, to understand nutrition better. And I was then also an athletic trainer, and I did all that stuff at the side while I'm still was a flight attendant. And I thought, this is not my life, you know, me being an athlete, me being a flight attendant at the side, just to get the money to pay the sport, because, you know, it's crazy expensive and women not getting paid in any sport. But I also never really got that I wasn't becoming a pro, but I wanted to be a pro so bad. But I never was brave enough to take that further step to actually compete, because it was still me dealing with this little girl who got told, you never can be, you never will be. But I wanted to. And luckily there was this guy who was, you know, working in the gym. And he was like, girl, I don't know anyone who's like working her ass off so much like you and who is actually that good. You should compete. And I was like, oh my God, no, I'm not brave enough. And I think it was 28. Think of that, 28. When I was like brave enough to take this step, the first step to compete in CrossFit, and it's called High Rocks, maybe some of you know, and this competition style. And yeah, and I was pretty successful for the beginning, and I figured out like, this is my thing, I want to compete, I love the competition, and I want to still try to be a pro athlete. And then I did another competition, another, and then 2009, I qualified for the World Cup in this, you know, competition style. And the World Cup should have been at the 4th of March, 2020. And yeah, maybe you already know what happened then. The pandemic happened. And of course, they had to cancel the competition, and I thought, wow, everything you fighted for your whole life was just taken away, and there were no flights anymore, there was no sports anymore in Germany, where we were like very strict, you know, on the rules. We weren't allowed to do anything, so everything was in a lockdown, and I felt like I'm falling in the most darkest hole. Everything that built me up these last years like was taken away, and I thought like, oh my God, this shit pandemic is the worst ever. And it turned out it was the best ever for me, because what happened in that moment, I was limiting myself so much, because I thought still that, you know, what the teachers were telling me my whole childhood, and I was just thankful that I even was allowed to do that. And now I know I'm just a person, I'm so full of things that I'm interested in and I'm good at. And because me now sitting at home, everything was taken away. It's like, okay, what do you do now? And it was the first time I was overthinking my whole life and thinking, I was short before turning 30. Is this it? Is this my life? Is this where you want to be? Is this your everything that you're just capable of? And then I felt like, you know what? Let's just give it a try. There's nothing to do. We were just sitting at home. And then you saw, you know, what happened with social media. And this is what I love, the beauty about social media, that there's actually a chance. Because you just can decide, okay, I want to present myself in a certain way. And it's like, okay, sport is everything to you. You love basketball so much. It's just the sport that was, I felt like this touched my heart the most. And think up to that day, I still didn't play basketball. So I was short before my 30th birthday. And the bubble started. You know, the NBA was the first to find a way to pick up, you know, the regular season again through what they did with the bubble, you know, putting the league into, you know, the Disneyland thing. So me in Germany sitting at home and watching the NBA starting again, watching basketball. And that was the first time where this thought came in my head, like, why did you never play basketball? Like, this is, since you're a little kid, this the sport that touched you the most, and you thought this is the cool sport, but you never played it. And this was, like, for real, in that moment, I was like, when you have this moment where you feel like you understand something, and it's like, why did I never do it? Like, I have to do it. And I remember, even though we were in the lockdown, I took the basketball and I went out and I took the first, you know, the first shot, and I was like, literally, like, tears were running in my eyes, and I knew, oh my God, this is my sport. Because through every sport that I went through, I did so many sports, it was always great and I was good, but it wasn't like, this is you. And in that moment, I knew, like, this is your sport. And first I was like very sad, because I was like, girl, you're turning 30 now and you never will have the chance now to become actually a pro basketball player. Which is sometimes still that day, sometimes hard for me, because this still that day would be like thinking of to be a pro basketball player, to be a pro athlete is like my biggest dream. And maybe for those who know, like, follow me already longer, this was what I, how this actually all started at Instagram. That I started to do Instagram and also writing and telling the beauty about the sports and showing people my journey on Instagram, how I was starting now with 30 years with a completely new sport, and to see, am I still able to become a pro basketball player? And I tell you, I'm honest, I believed in me. But then you see the reality kicking in, and it's not because I think I'm not possible from the skills level. Because what happened then, because it was the pandemic and I didn't have to work, I was every day working out for 5 to 6 hours playing basketball. And I just found my passion in it, and I wanted to get better and better. And I was just, you know, when you work every day so many hours, you become better so quickly. And I was, yeah, this was Instagram back then about me showing the process, which was tough at the beginning. You know, people make fun of you. Of course, you look like a dummy at the beginning, but also so many got interested because they thought it's brave and it's interesting. She's 30 and they got inspired by what I was doing. And it's like, oh my God, she's so brave and this is so cool. When she can do it, maybe I can do it as well. And why not starting with the new sports, even though I'm 30, who said like, this is too late now. So this is how people start to follow me. And then also me telling the story at the side about the beauty, about the NBA, because this was what was actually going on back then, me writing about the NBA, about the beauty, about the sports, and also to showcase why we're just all about soccer, why, what is the problem in Germany that we don't give basketball the room that it should, you know, should have, because it's such a great and wonderful sport, and all these athletes that we have in Germany playing basketball who are not getting enough attention. And so me writing about that, showcasing that, and showing my journey, how I was learning to play basketball. So this was actually the beginning with why I'm sitting here now telling you that. And oh my God, it's 4 years now, a little longer than 4 years. And to see where I am right now, to be able to be a journalist in the NBA, and it's again, also because I believe God always provided, but because I learned with that time that everything is possible when you believe in yourself and when you work your ass off for it. And trust me, this was nothing given to me like easily. Oh my God, I worked so hard for it. And so what happened was, to kind of go through the last four, a little bit more years, you know, I started then when we finally had our first flights back again, had our first flights to the States. I was like, okay, let's go. It was just always me, one woman show. There was no one helping me or like, you should do this or that. And I just always went with what I felt like, what's the right next step to do. And I was like, okay, let's go to the NBA games and just showcase the beauty and write about it. And then I was like doing those YouTube videos, doing those vlogs, how an NBA game looks like. And then again, writing about it. And still showing my basketball journey. And then what I just said earlier, where also the reality kicked in, you know, at the beginning when I was like 1 year just like playing basketball every year, training every year, I really do believe in, okay, this is maybe possible to still become a pro. But then to be in the position to work as much again and to have so many working days, and unfortunately, I was hoping so bad, because of course I didn't have any clue in which direction all this is going. I was still so much hoping that maybe someone would come and say like, hey, we see the talent that you have. We give you a chance. I will train you and I will train you for free and try to see what's possible. Because the problem, at one point you need a trainer who is kind of showing you then to explain the game to you, to show you more skills to read and understand the game better. When you get to a limit by just training yourself, you know, because I didn't have the money as a flight attendant, you don't earn that much money. And I lost a lot of money because of the pandemic. We got, we just got 65% from our salary. So it was really hard on, I wasn't working full time because I started, you know, doing also this trainer stuff, and this all like fall away. And then I just couldn't make it possible for my money to pay a trainer and to have enough time to train as much as it was needed to become better in this position where I was in. And the dream that I had, someone was coming to help me, this never happened. But I also don't want to be sad about that, because everything happens for a reason. So what happened was I was just working so much to make life living that I couldn't also go to play in a league, because I was in a league, but they didn't give me minutes at the weekend for the game because I couldn't go to all the practices because I had to work so much. And this is the problem when, you know, when you get into sports when you're older, you're already working, and then it's just too hard to have enough time to go to all the practices, because all the other ones in my team, you know, they were just younger kids still at school or studying, so that's something different, you know. And this is the problem what you see so many sports when you get older, and especially with women, that because you don't get paid, you need to start to work, but when you start to work, you don't have the time enough to train. And oh my god, I was hoping and trying so bad, you know. At the beginning, you saw what was happening with social media, that people get like sponsors and deals and to get paid to showcase the journey, what you do, whatever. Oh my god, I was hoping so bad to kind of get the same, that someone, you know, will pay me, or even if it's just not money, but to give me the training sessions, and that it's enough commercial for them when we show the process. This was at the beginning a big dream of mine, but it never happened, sadly. So yeah, it was me the last years always trying to figure out what am I actually doing here and where is this thing going to. Like, then you realize, okay, now I'm getting really older, now it's not really a chance to actually become pro. I'm still working on training a lot of basketball, and I still wish I could play more, but the reality is I'm just working so much that I don't know how. Still, you never know what's going to happen, but yeah, still my dream is, you know, I'm still working my ass off and whatever. I still do CrossFit, I still play basketball. Every day when I'm free, I'm training, I'm working for real. My heart, when you ask me what is my profession, I feel like I'm a pro athlete, because it's just the only thing I want to do and where I've put the most work into. It is me becoming a better athlete. and at the side, which is for many people. I do believe that many pro athletes don't train more than me, for real. I really do believe that, because I train every day. So me training every day, then still being a flight attendant, and now just being a journalist, and how this happened is actually for me like the biggest blessing, because I didn't study journalism. And the funny thing is, and this is why this is one like the next biggest, one of the biggest testimonies in my life, me being dyslexia, teacher telling me I'm not able, and I always loved to write. And I remember this day at school where the teacher found this little book that I had where I was like writing stories into it. She found it. She was like, girl, you're not allowed to write, because in every word there's a mistake. This is trash. And it took me like 32 years, 31 years maybe, to understand that it's not about, you can be a great writer, and it's not about if you write the word right. It doesn't mean if you're good in telling stories. Luckily, even these days, you know, with auto correction and all that, doesn't even matter anymore if you 100% know how to write the word in the right way. It's about, are you good at telling stories, and do you understand how to put something on paper, what you just saw? And yes, and I'm very good at that, and because I think I'm good, and you know, through all what I went through, all the traveling, everything what I saw, it's just, when you understand cultures better, people better, how things happen in life, it's, and then you may be quite good at telling a story and write it down. It's just use the details that you see, the perspective that you have. When I watch a game, when I look at the life of a player, what I see when I get into an interview, because I kind of have a sense of what the player went through, I can also come up with different questions, because I went through these journeys, I went through that life, and I maybe, even it's not dissimilar, but I went through also stuff that I maybe can have a different understanding. And also when it comes to have a crazy story of your own, to tell a story, you may be better, and it's not maybe you don't even have to go through certain stuff to be good in writing a story. But I think it can help you to be very authentic with what you write. And so being dyslexia, you don't want to know how much I really would like to do that. To go to these teachers back then and to show them what I'm actually doing now. And I just can give a big shout out at this point for the magazine I write for, that they were so brave to give me this opportunity, even though I didn't study journalism. So I was doing this on social media like for 2 years, and then one day I had this email that they sent me, which I first wanted to delete because I thought it's spam. Luckily I opened it, and then they wrote me like, we would like to offer you a column in our magazine to write about what you see, you know, the way how you look at the NBA, because we just love what you write about the NBA and how you showcase it. And I was like, what the, oh my god, this was the magazine I was buying as a teenager, which is the oldest, most known magazine in Germany. They are just now on the market for 30 years. And I was like, oh my god, this is crazy. It was, of course, I was scared at one point, but again, something inside of me knew, yes, I can do this. Even though I've never wrote a story for someone, for public, you know, I was writing always for me. But, and again, I just knew teachers telling me like, oh no, you can't write, you're dyslexia. And I knew, no, I can do that. I want to do that. And this is now 2 years ago, I published my first column in this magazine. And this is also like such a funny story. Like how I covered my first NBA game. It was season 2022-23. Yeah. the Warriors just became champion and I was covering their first home game versus the Trailblazers because I'm actually a Trailblazers fan, so I picked on that game. Luckily, this is the cool thing with the column, you know, when people know this was the blessing, because what I did through social media, people kind of knew me and I was kind of known in this basketball bubble for what I was doing and for, you know, basketball in Germany. So when you get a column, then it's about people want to know in the basketball world, what does Aurelia think about certain, you know, what is happening, things in the NBA. So I can kind of pick on whatever I think it's interesting. So I was picking on that game because I want to see how, you know, the champion are doing and also how they play my team. And I love the Blazers. And I remember, like, when I covered what the magazine told me, they just said to me, like, go watch that game and then write about it. And then I was like, okay, fine, I can do that. And I went to, you know, the Golden State Arena. And when they handed over the credentials to me, they were like, yeah, you have locker room access. And this is like, if you don't know it, the NBA always hands out like two different kind of credentials. You can have tier 1 or tier 2. Tier 1 is locker room access included and tier 2 is like excluded. And I was like, okay, I have locker room access. And I knew some stories. I knew, like, of course that you can interview the players there. This is the moment, you know. And I thought that at a basketball game there would be always like hundreds of journalists. And I remember it was pregame. It's like a certain time where you're allowed to go into the locker room. When I went in there, I was like, for sure there will be now like several journalists. So I didn't think of, like, I just went to the game, but I just need to watch it. So I didn't have any notes. I wasn't prepared for an interview or nothing. And this was the moment where I knew, like, I'm at the right spot, because me not being prepared, I just went in. And I still have to laugh when I think about this situation. And I, like, no, I was in the locker room, and it was, you know, I went into the Portland locker room first. And of course, because they were the visiting team and it's the Portland Trailblazers, no one really cares about them. Like, everyone was in the locker room because mostly journalists, you know, don't get in there, because when, you know, normally players kind of hide. We didn't know, oh, this is the time now where, you know, the journalists are coming in. But mostly just think no one is coming. I know that now, but back then I didn't know. So almost the whole team was in there. And me, this little blonde girl from Germany, stepping in that locker room. And everyone's kind of staring at me. And I was like, okay, where are the journalists? And why is no one here? And I felt so embarrassed. But also I was like in that moment, okay, you can't just get out now. Like, this would be kind of embarrassing. And, oh my God, what do I do? Luckily, this is also a story for itself, but I was once invited for a role to play at a theater. So when I was in this training to be an actor for this, you know, for this theater thing, they trained me a lot and taught me a lot. When someone doesn't, you know, they don't know if you're afraid if you don't show it. Should they know how it is from the inside of me, how I feel? And I was just like thinking of that. It's like, okay, they don't know that I'm crazy scared. If you just act like that you know what to do, they think you know what you're doing. And this is what I was like trying to do, you know, just act like you know what you're doing. And I was like, okay, I saw Josh Hart. So Josh Hart was actually the first guy I've ever had an interview with. One day I have to tell him. And oh my God, he was so sweet. And I knew, you know, that he was once in Germany working out. And I was like, the first thing. And luckily, I did automatically everything right, even though I didn't know how to do that. So I went towards him and was like, Josh, do you have like some minutes? And I was like, yeah. And I didn't even record it because I was stepping in there. I just wanted to watch what was going on. And I was like, hey, Josh. And I kind of talked to him about the time in Germany and about the game, blah, blah, blah. And then I was like so hyped in that moment how well that went. even after that interview, I kind of then realized, oh, maybe you should record it. So I took my phone, you know, put it on recording, and then I went to Norman Powell, and you know, both of them were back then with the Blazers, and then I interviewed Norman Powell, and oh my god, I went out there my first game not knowing, just had like right away like two great interviews that I never published till that day, because when I went to that magazine and tell them I have two interviews, they were like, why do you have interviews? I was like, I don't know, I had locker room access, and they asked me to do that, and they didn't ask me for that, but they gave me the chance to do it, and I just did it. I don't know. So it took a while until we figured out, okay, we actually can publish these interviews, because I just consistently, every game that I covered, I just always be, and this is the thing why I know I'm at the right spot, because I don't even need to make notes, because I know these players and I love the sport, and I'm so interested by get to know their story and how they feel and their thoughts, and this is why I, you know, I think also because what I went through as an athlete, and to kind of, you know the hard journey. And this is why I know I'm at the right spot, because I don't even need to learn. It just comes so naturally by being interested in, to, you know, telling the stories. And this is also one thing what is so important for me, that the players understand it's not about that I want to come up with a, like a trash quote and just to get a lot of clicks. It's about I want to tell their journey and, you know, the beauty about every player behind. And so I hope that, you know, one day, you know, it's a lot about earning trust. Your interview gets better when the player trusts you. And I hope this is one thing I will be known for in the NBA, that the player know, you know, it's her, I can trust her, and she will not come up with the weird quote or whatever. So yeah, this is how everything started, how I started to become a journalist. Me having this column, which is called Flight Girl. I told this story earlier in my last, actually was in German, how this happened and how I started, you know, to publish interviews with the players, just going in the locker room. And I still till the, this day, I don't make notes. I just, and this is also, I think, why this is working so well, because I never force something. I never would force a player to like, could you please talk to me right now? It's every time when I approach a player and I'm, you know, asking them for an interview, I always tell them like right away, if not, don't worry, just if you have time. And I don't want, you know, because when they see like, okay, I don't have to say yes, and because I give them an option, I think they feel like more comfortable in the situation. I don't know. I mean, of course, sounds so stupid when I say give them an option. Of course they can say no, but when I say it like right away, but it's totally fine if you don't want to, like, so I don't know, it feels like it's a more comfortable situation. And yeah, so me starting now my third season being an NBA journalist, this is like the craziest thing for me. And every day since that, since I started doing that, I'm growing so much in confidence. And it's not about saying, oh, I'm great, it's about understanding that I always limit myself because I believed what the teacher said back then, and then I realized this was never the truth, and this is not what I believe about myself, because I see now these talents that I have, and I know it's still so much at the beginning and I still have to learn so much, but now since I start to believe in me, I'm growing so much in so many things, because this is the biggest, this is why I always say like the mind is the biggest weapon, because when my mind is not afraid, even though you may be afraid, but I understood this is also wrong thinking, because when I'm afraid, it just shows that it has a value to me, otherwise I wouldn't be afraid about the situation, because when it doesn't have value for me, okay, then maybe I mess up and then whatever. And but I see that the fear is not real, you know, the fear the situation is actually not fearful. It's just the way how I look at it. And when I understand that, I just need to look at it like, yes, this is maybe a challenge, but I know I can do it. And even if I fail, that's totally okay, because through failing, I will learn to get better. I will learn a different perspective. And as more perspective as I get, as better I can become. And when you understand, you don't need to be afraid, or you may be not good enough, because you always can learn. It starts like that. You kind of not limit yourself, and there actually are no limits anymore. And as braver you become, and this is why I feel like I'm just at the beginning, and I think it's so beautiful. I'm so excited for everything that's happening. And yes, and I think I kind of feel like this is everything I wanted to tell, even though it's so much more I wanted to tell. And there's, I could even tell you guys like so much more, but this is kind of the story behind, to understand why I also started with me being a kid, because otherwise when you don't know the background, all the rest doesn't make sense. And this is why I still, you know, I still want to inspire and encourage. Start, even though you're 35, you're 40, you're 50, whatever. If you feel like we want to start with a new sport, with a new job, just do it. There's actually no one telling you you can't do it. If you want to do it, just do it. And you always, even though, like me, I started this was kind of hoping and seeing, can I still become a pro basketball player? Even though I'm not becoming a pro basketball player, think of where this brought me just by trying. And the process of trying, and the way is actually, you know, the journey is actually the goal, you know, the process through that, by just doing it. And this is why I always say, you can't plan life. It always kind of turns out different, but that's totally fine. And it's the beauty about it. And it's why I just started to live by day by day, because every day is its own story. You never know how the end of the month looks like. And I think it's beautiful. And I love it. And I love it so much. And I hope I could like inspire you a little bit with that, and encourage you with maybe starting with something totally new, or just keep on going with whatever you do. And you maybe thought you never would get there at one point. And even if you never get there, what actually the dream was, it's already so beautiful, the journey that you will take to try. And something always will happen with it, and something great will always happen. Because even if it's just that you learn, okay, this is not it, then it's maybe something else, but then you learn something about you and about yourself, and then it still wasn't a failure. It's, and this is always the wrong thinking. It was to get there, to know that, even then now is already the beautiful journey, because you learn something more about yourself. I would say that was my last word. Believe in yourself. This was crazy. Guys, I wish you a beautiful day. And I'm excited what the next episode will bring. It's Lillard. He got the shot.